Well, a very good morning, everyone. We'll be looking at Psalm 127, the psalm which has made a very profound impression on masses of people over the centuries. Here's one example coming up of the kind of impact that this psalm has made. This is a coat of arms. I guess no one here knows what it's of. It's actually the coat of arms of Edinburgh, and here's the arms shown on the walls of Edinburgh Castle. But note particularly the motto that's above the coat of arms, three Latin words, Nisi Dominum Frustra. And we have a resident Latin expert here who's going to give the translation. Unless the Lord in vain. And of course, those are familiar words that you have heard several times this morning. They are from the ancient Latin version of Psalm 127, the first three words, unless the Lord in vain. And they are the words which not only the motto of Edinburgh, but of all sorts of other buildings, of colleges, of public buildings, and so on, all over the world. These words also made a profound impression on Benjamin Franklin, and this is the person who was involved in setting up the American Constitution. And in one of the big debates in the assembly which agreed the Constitution, he said this. He said, "We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they'd labour in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall proceed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. We shall be divided by our little, partial, local interests. Our prospects will be confounded, and we ourselves shall become a reproach and a byword down to future ages." Very interesting words in the light of the storming of the Capitol on January the 6th, 2021. Now, if you're here on New Year's Day, you may recall that I mentioned that we have a grandson whose third baptismal name, obviously a lot of hangovers around on New Year's Day. You may recall it when I say his third baptismal name is Jedidiah. And this, you've had a bit of Latin, so now we're in for some Hebrew, so Ben Thompson, where are you when we need you? But this word Jedidiah is a Hebrew word meaning beloved of God or friend of God, as it says in the caption there. And it was the name that was given at his birth to someone we know better as King Solomon. It's Solomon's other name, if you like. And it's a very special name, and it's the fact that Solomon is very much associated with this psalm. If you were following in the Pew Bibles, you'll have seen that under the heading Psalm 127, it says a song of ascent of Solomon. And whether of Solomon means by Solomon or from the time of Solomon or in the style of Solomon is not entirely clear. But at the end of verse 2, there is a kind of hidden pun which may suggest something to us. We see at the end of verse 2 these words, "For he grants sleep to those he loves." And the Hebrew word there is Jedidiah, those he loves. And it just may be that just as an artist sometimes hides their signature in a painting, so Solomon hides his signature in the words of this psalm. And of course, Solomon wrote several other parts of the Old Testament. The book of Proverbs is attributed to him, the book of Ecclesiastes. And this psalm sort of echoes those books. The imagery, the striking pithy phrases, and the vivid imagery of the book of Proverbs is here in this psalm. And it also echoes Ecclesiastes with its very somber message that without God, work and life and home are meaningless. Without God in our life, there's little sense of purpose. Achievements are empty and hollow. And three times in these first two verses, the words in vain, frustra from the Latin, in vain, crop up. But Psalm 127 sort of counterbalances that negativity with some more positive messages that we can rest in God's blessing because everything that we need comes from him. The two great needs of our lives for provision, for protection, they come from God. And that life doesn't have to be labor in vain, but it can be full of God's provision and productivity. So we come to verse 1 of the psalm, which introduces two parallel images, the building of a house and the guarding of a city. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Now, we spent a lot of time in the Black Country, and in the Black Country, there are many public houses which are called the Labour in Vain. Here's one of them. It's a very famous one, landmark in Stourbridge, big crossroads in Stourbridge for many years. Until recently, it lived down to its name and had to close because obviously things weren't working there, and is subsequently, I understand, been turned into flats. Something of a labour in vain there. But this verse talks very specifically about building a house, but really it's more of an image of building anything in our lives. Whether it's a house, a business, a church, or a home. When Benjamin Franklin talked about building a house, he was talking about building a nation. And basically, the message here is don't start anything without God. Whether we're starting college, as some may be, whether we're starting a new project, a new job, or a new relationship, don't do it without God. One of the Proverbs says, commit your way unto the Lord, or commit to the Lord whatever you do, and your plans will succeed. Whatever we attempt in life, commit it to God from the very beginning. Because if God's not in it, then the blessing of God will not be on it. We may all end up in frustration. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labour in vain. And then he goes on to guarding in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. Now, this has to do with guarding or maintaining what has already been built or in the process of being built. Those of you who were studying Nehemiah recently may well remember the guarding of the walls. It has to regard what's already built, like the city of Edinburgh, for example, already exists. And if we want God's blessing and provision in building our lives, we must not only look to God in the beginning, but also to continue with God as well. You're very familiar with the Great Wall of China, which was built many centuries ago to defend China from the invasion of outsiders. And it's far more massive than other famous walls, the Berlin Wall, Hadrian's Wall, the Mexican Wall. The Great Wall of China outshines them all, 4,000 miles long, 20 feet wide, and so on. It's about as secure as you can get. And no one ever breached its walls, but the Mongols got through it. Do you recall how? They bribed the guards. And they got into China and created havoc. There are always weak points. And however strong the defences we put up, if we're not looking to the Lord to guide us, then our weak points will be exposed and our walls breached. So unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. We may think we're invincible, we've got all the bases covered, we may have quite wisely planned ahead, we've taken sensible precautions. But it doesn't matter how many watchmen are on the wall, how many pension plans and insurance policies and investment portfolios and everything we might have. If God is not our primary means of protection and defence, it's all hollow. It's all pride and self-sufficiency, as we heard earlier. And there are also those emotional defence mechanisms that we set up as well, that we set up to protect ourselves from being hurt. Our prickliness, our capacity to ridicule others, or the false personality that we present, or avoidance techniques, all things which are false defences that do not have God in them. And then we come to verse 2, which has already been quoted here this morning. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. I think this is saying there's nothing wrong with working hard. And in fact, we're supposed to work hard, and sometimes we do need to work very long hours, and circumstances do sometimes require that. But there's a right way and a wrong way to work. Sometimes we need to slow down and trust God to provide for us. Versus saying that there's no value in overworking or staying up late at night worrying. Working harder is not always the answer. Trusting God is. Trusting God to meet our needs. God wants us to work and to work hard, but he also wants to give us the capacity to rest in his blessing, to be at ease in his presence, the fact that he's doing the building and the guarding and giving sleep. Psalm 4 says, I will lie down and sleep in peace, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. And the two extremes that we need to avoid here, not to try and do everything ourselves, where we're very dependent upon ourselves, but not to expect God to do it all for us either. Wonderful little phrase I came across, don't be a workaholic, and don't be a shirkaholic. Work hard, finish your day, trust God, and go to sleep. So we come to the second half of the psalm, which is perhaps more about God's provision and blessing in a more domestic context. And I wonder if there's just a little bit of irony here. Having just talked about the blessing of sleep, he then goes to talk about children and having more babies. And in my experience, those two things don't necessarily go together. The message is that children are a gift from God. Sons are a heritage from the Lord. Children are a reward from him. And because of those verses, this psalm is one which to this day many Jewish families recite as part of an act of thanksgiving for the birth of a new child in the family. Children, a reward from him, or a blessing perhaps from him. It is not unknown for children to be considered a burden or an inconvenience or a commodity or a problem rather than a blessing. Many of us here can recall perhaps in 1980 China introduced its one child policy to limit the population explosion that was happening. It abandoned it in 2016 when some of the consequences were becoming clear. For example, the sex ratio between boys and girls was getting out of balance and the gap was widening. Despite this, you know, propaganda picture of a very smiling daughter, in fact, what most families wanted was to have a son. And so this led to widespread abortions of female fetuses, putting up girls for adoption, and even infanticide. Also, there was a growing disproportion of elderly people and fewer children to support them. And also families often had more than one child, but they didn't register subsequent children, which meant that as those surplus children grew up, they had no paperwork and therefore found it very difficult to get education or to get work. And it's estimated there's probably several millions of these surplus children in China. And that's a very extreme example of what can happen when children are not looked upon as a gift from God. And it is not only in China that the demographic time bombs are ticking away. In the Western world, people are choosing to have fewer and fewer children. There are all sorts of understandable reasons for that. There was a couple on the radio the other day agonizing over the economics of starting a family. There's a statistic which says that a child today, to be raised to the age of 18, costs something like £160,000 for a couple, £190,000 or thereabouts for a single parent family. And others are perhaps reluctant to bring children into a fractured and very unstable world. And it's understandable, and there is much sympathy with those who are struggling with the challenges. And those of us from the baby boomer generation have perhaps had it very easy. But times are very different back in the days of the Old Testament, where a large family was considered essential for survival. And long before social security and social care, children were God's, if you like, original pension plan or retirement plan. As having children provided security and protection for the whole family. A lot of children could be lost to famine or war or disease. You needed a large family up front. And some people have used the verses 3 and 4 of that psalm to teach that everyone should have a large family. We did our bit, but it perhaps doesn't mean that. C.H. Spurgeon, great 19th century preacher, said, "A quiver may be small, yet full, and many are blessed who have no quiver at all." I think the picture of children here is a picture of what different ways in which God blesses. It's not exclusive to children, it's more a picture. And it reminds us, perhaps as well, of children's obligations to parents as they grow older. just parents take care of children when they're young. So perhaps, according to the Bible, children are to have a mind to their parents' needs when they're old. I'm looking forward to that. So children or no children, or general blessings of provision and protection, which perhaps what this is all about. God promises to provide for all our needs. Children are just that one example of God's provision. And perhaps that curious final part of the psalm, which I know Max is very exercised over, and which I haven't really addressed, but maybe that's also about protection in law cases, and which is what happens at the gate is all about. So whatever provision we have from the Lord, he will not have us labour in vain, but to rest in his blessing. So in a nutshell, here are four guidelines for living emerging from the psalm. Very simply, commit all that we begin to the Lord, submit all that we have to the Lord, recognise that all that we have comes from God's hand, and to trust God to meet all our needs. Amen.